Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, March 13th, 2022. I'll begin with the most recent articles. Domestic Violence in Tom Green County, Here's How to Help, by Elena Udgen, published March 16th. Millions of people experience it, but don't say a word. Maybe they are worried saying something will put them in danger, or they may feel embarrassed. Domestic violence is a reality in the Concho Valley and across the world, and victims often suffer alone. Love should not hurt, said Melissa Hernandez, victim services advocate for Open Arms Rape Crisis Center and LGBT Plus Services. If it does, ask for help. Asking for help is a strength. Richard Espinoza, public information officer for SAPD, urged people who experience domestic violence to come forward. The state of Texas and Tom Green County take domestic and family violence very seriously and have resources available to victims in the case that they are incapable of leaving their abusers for whatever reason, Espinoza said. There are several organizations ready to help, from escape plans, emergency assistance, or just someone to talk to. Here's a look at what you should do, and here you can who you can contact for help. What to do if you experience domestic violence in Tom Green County. Whether you are a victim of domestic violence or witness it, Espinoza urges people to report it to law enforcement. The main thing that we would like people to do regarding domestic family violence is to contact police and have the incident investigated and documented at the bare minimum, he said. We are able to give information and offer resources to the victims that they would never know of or get otherwise. People can contact SAPD at 325-655-6256 during regular business hours or non-emergency dispatch at 325-657-4315 after hours. The Tom Green County Sheriff's Office can be reached at 325-655-8111. If there is an emergency, contact 911. Espinoza also addressed two common myths regarding contacting law enforcement in these cases. The myths are the first person to call police is considered the victim, and every investigation leads to an arrest. Whoever calls first is irrelevant and plays little or no part in how officers conduct their investigation, he said. Investigators examine what happened and make arrests based on if there was a physical assault and if they can determine who the aggressor was, Espinoza said. Although some investigations do lead to an arrest, we try using other options, such as separating all parties involved if no assault had occurred, he said. Our goal is to prevent the furtherance of violence and to prevent an assault from occurring if one hasn't already occurred. Espinoza also addressed that anyone can be abused, regardless of gender. Hernandez mentioned that having a safety plan is important. The Tom Green County Crisis Intervention Unit can help with that. We never tell a victim what they should do because every situation is different, and leaving an abuser without a safety plan can result in the victim being killed, she said. Instead, we make them aware of their reporting options and help them with the criminal justice process. One thing people may not know, according to Hernandez, is that victims of abuse can break their rental lease if they are a victim of domestic or sexual violence. The family shelter stated that some people might not realize certain behaviors are abusive. Violence is not just hitting with a fist or getting hospitalized with an injury, according to a list the shelter gives to clients. It includes many different actions. There are various types of abuse: physical, economic, financial, verbal, emotional, and digital technological. Here are San Angelo area resources for domestic abuse victims. One common concern in abuse situations, according to Espinoza, is that people might stay in abusive relationships because they feel they won't be able to support themselves. We have many resources that we utilize to assist victims to get to the point where they are able to support themselves, he said, some of which are at the Tom Green County Crisis Intervention Unit and the Family Shelter. Open Arm Rape Crisis Center and LGBT Plus Services offers assistance to victims of domestic and family violence along with support. Call 325-658-8888. Our area of specialty is working with victims, survivors of sexual violence crimes and gender discrimination, Hernandez said. Oftentimes, services such as domestic violence and sexual violence might overlap. When they overlap, the center refers clients to the family shelter and/or the crisis intervention unit. The center will continue helping victims as needed. We partner with many local and state agencies that can refer clients to if they are dealing with any type of stalking, legal matter, housing needs, financial needs, etc., Hernandez said. No matter the situation, we always believe the victim and we will do our best to help them work through their healing journey. The Crisis Intervention Unit, comprised of civilian volunteers, helps victims of violent crimes or other crisis. They can help people navigate protective orders, compensation applications, create an escape plan, assist with law enforcement, and offer limited funds for assistance. Call their office at 325-227-8753. Or if you need assistance, call 325-655-8111 and ask dispatch to get the on-call volunteer. The Family Shelter, which offers shelter and assistance to victims of domestic, family, and dating violence, including families with children. Call 325-655-5774. For legal help involving family violence, call 800-374-4673. There is also the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233, which can help with safety planning, legal help, and referrals to other services. Love should not hurt, a message for domestic violence victims. Officials with Open Arms and the Family Shelter want people who experience abuse to know they deserve better. You're worthy of living a healthy and violence-free life, Hernandez said. Valerie Tillery, program director of the shelter, also urged people to reach out. While it is hard to believe that someone they love can hurt them, no one deserves to be beat or abused. Reach out for help, she said. Here are some excerpts from a letter given to victims of domestic violence and emotional abuse from the family shelter. One area that people can't seem to come out of at first is the foggy cloud of confusion and decision-making. The breaking point for one may not be the breaking point for another. Perhaps you have been so wrapped up in the trauma that you haven't recognized the signs. Unhappiness, unpredictable emotions, flashbacks, and even physical symptoms like headaches or nausea. The list goes on. You can choose to draw on available resources, social support, and community connection. You deserve to be happy. You deserve joy in your heart. You are worth it. Propane explosion causes one death in Rowena. Numerous wildfires contained in Runnels County. By Bill Hancock, Runnels County Register, published March 16th, Rowena. A suspected propane explosion in Rowena on March 14th resulted in a house fire that claimed the life of J.B. Fuchs while sending his wife, Ethel, to the burn unit at a hospital in Lubbock. The Rowena VFD responded to the fire overnight and are credited by witnesses as pulling the people out of the burning structure that was fully engulfed at the time. Both people were evacuated by helicopter to burn units in Lubbock. Wildfires have consumed large swaths of Runnels County throughout Sunday and Monday. Volunteer fire departments from Winters to Ballinger to Rowena responded to at least 7 reported wildfires. The flames, fueled by parched land that hadn't received significant rainfall since August. The flames were pushed along by 15-mile-per-hour winds from the north. The winds were gusting to over 20 miles per hour. High winds have been forecast through the weekend as they continue to complicate the efforts of firefighters who had been battling them for well over 36 hours. The National Weather Service predicts a 70% chance of rain on Monday, March 21st. If the rain doesn't materialize, it could be a long month for already weary firefighters. Raton to Laredo corridor added to interstate highway system, paving way for I-27 expansion. By Alex Driggers, Lubbock Avalanche Journal, published March 16th. West Texas lawmakers and public policy leaders are celebrating a huge milestone for the future of Interstate 27 as President Joe Biden signed a bill into law Tuesday that includes federal highway designation for portions of the Ports to Plains corridor in Texas and New Mexico. As part of the sweeping $1.5 trillion fiscal year 2022 omnibus appropriations bill, the Ports to Plains corridor from Raton to New Mexico to Laredo, Texas, was added to the federal interstate highway system, marking the first step for I-27 to expand from its current Lubbock to Amarillo route southward to the Mexican border at Laredo, through the Texas Panhandle, eventually north to the Canadian border. The I-27 extension will pass through San Angelo on its way to Del Rio. One of the most significant events of today was the inclusion of the designation of I-27 in the appropriation bill, said Brenda Gunter, mayor for the city of San Angelo. We are seeing a project that will have a significant impact on the Texas economy as well as our national GDP. The hard work and effort to accomplish this designation is finally paying off with a tremendous impact on the future of our region and the state of Texas. Thank you to all who have been part of the process. San Angelo is also part of the future I-14 corridor that extends from West Texas to Georgia after the signing of the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill in November 2021. The Port to Plains corridor represents 3 of 8 border crossings along the Texas-Mexico border, Laredo, Eagle Pass, and Del Rio. As the next steps to fund and construct the extension of I-27 begin, the economic benefit for the U.S. is the addition of 1.7 million jobs and $287 billion increase in GDP along the corridor. Establishing a 4-lane federal highway for I-27 is a game changer for our economy and quality of life in West Texas for decades to come, and will strengthen our food security and energy independence for the entire country, U.S. Representative Jody C. Arrington, Republican Lubbock, said Tuesday, adding that the designation was one of his top 3 goals when he took office in 2016. I had a lot of help from colleagues on both sides of the aisle, and I'm humbled by the opportunities this will provide for generations of West Texans. According to a Texas Department of Transportation study, the extension of I-27 could mean big improvements to safety on Texas's roads, decreasing the state's annual crash rate by as much as 21%. It could also increase the state's gross domestic product by more than $55 million and add upwards of 22,000 new jobs, Arrington office said. The Ports to Plains regional effort has been ongoing for decades, and today the interstate designation for I-27 has finally been signed into law, Lubbock Mayor Dan Pope said Tuesday. Thank you to Congressman Jody Arrington for his leadership on this project. This momentous achievement is due to the unwavering support from leaders like Randy Neubauer and Robert Duncan. This designation will ultimately improve necessary infrastructure and increase safety in Texas for commerce and visitors. This is a huge local, regional, and statewide win. Pedestrian dies after being struck by a vehicle in San Angelo. By Elena Edgen, published March 15th. A 23-year-old man died in San Angelo on Tuesday morning after being hit by a vehicle, according to a police news release. About 7:06 a.m. Tuesday, March 15th, police arrived to a vehicle pedestrian crash in the 1100 block of North Bell Street. Diego Reyes Mar, 23, had been walking southbound in the middle of the road and stepped in front of a northbound vehicle, records state. The vehicle struck him, causing incapacitating injuries. He was sent to Shannon Medical Center, where he died from the injuries, according to the release. Police are investigating and next of kin have been notified, according to the release. This is the second crash-related fatality in 2 days. On Monday, Colton Frazier, 21, died after his vehicle collided with the concrete abutment of the pedestrian bridge on the east side of Bryant Boulevard. San Angelo man dies after vehicle crashes into bridge. By Elena Edgen, published March 14th. An early morning collision killed a man in San Angelo on Monday, according to a police news release. About 2:45 a.m., Monday, March 14th, police arrived in the 2800 block of South Bryant Boulevard for a reported one-vehicle crash, records state. A white 1997 Toyota 4Runner had been driving north on Bryant, then left the roadway and hit the concrete abutment of the pedestrian bridge on the east side, according to the release. Police found the driver, Colton Frazier, 21, dead at the site of the crash, records state. Dangerous fire conditions in San Angelo. Here's what you should know. By Elena Edgen, published March 14th. While the weather in San Angelo is expected to warm up this week, the National Weather Service warned critical fire weather conditions are expected throughout the day Monday. From noon to 10 p.m. Monday, March 14th, Tom Green, Irion, Crockett, Schleicher, and Sutton counties are under a red flag warning. This is issued for critical fire conditions when fires could spread rapidly. We issue these when relative humidity is below 20% and winds are over 20 miles per hour or higher, said Joel Dunn, National Weather Service Observation Program leader. We issue it mainly for fire conditions because fires could spread rapidly. Winds will calm down Tuesday, but that will change Wednesday and Thursday, likely leading to continued fire concerns, according to Dunn. During times of elevated fire weather, don't do anything outside to cause a spark, he said. Make sure trucks have no chains dragging and fully extinguish cigarettes. This warning comes after at least 2 fires in 3 days, one at a campsite used by people without housing and another at a salvage yard. At the campsite fire on Monday, March 11th, the Diocese of San Angelo stepped in to shelter people. For anyone wanting help for the diocese's efforts, contact Catholic Outreach Services at 325-617-7292 or email catholicoutreachservices@gmail.com. The second fire started around 6:30 p.m. Sunday on Nelson Street, moments before large clouds of smoke billowed over the Bel Air neighborhood. Residents heard several loud pops. As firefighters attempted to put out the blaze, a second burst appeared within the same block. First responders started leaving the area around 7 p.m. as smoke dissipated. Beer Barn Live Music Lineup Announced for 2022 San Angelo Rodeo by Rosanna Frere, published March 14th. The live music roundup has been announced for the 2022 San Angelo Rodeo at the Buffalo Social Club, better known as the Beer Barn. The Buffalo Social Club is a great place for adults to sit back and have a nice drink after being at the fairgrounds and rodeo all day, according to the rodeo's Facebook page. Whether you want to sit down and unwind or put on your dancing boots to two-step your way to a fun night, the Buffalo Social Club is the place to do it. The rodeo and carnival will take place April 1st through April 16th. Here is the live music schedule at the Beer Barn. Friday, April 1st, Texas Double Shot. Saturday, April 2nd, Ross Cooper. Thursday, April 7th, Ken Foe. Friday, April 8th, J.P. Herrera. Saturday, April 9th, Hayden Haddock. Wednesday, April 13th, Braxton Keith. Thursday, April 14th, Jake Worthington. Friday, April 15th, Case Harden. Saturday, April 16th, William Beckman. Visit sanangelorodeo.com for more information. New bell tower to be built in center of Angelo State Campus by Tom Nury, published March 12th. The construction of a new bell tower on the Angelo State University campus that will be named in honor of the late entrepreneur and philanthropist Robert Bob Housley has been approved by the Texas Tech University System School Board of Regents. The Housley Tower is expected to be 70 to 80 feet tall and will be located in the center of the ASU campus between the Stevens Chapel and South Johnson Street. It will feature an electronic Verdon Carillion bell system, and the exterior and roof of the tower will match the brick and stone construction and metal roof of the Stevens Chapel. The project is being funded by a generous gift from Mona Housley in memory of her late husband, Bob Housley, founder of Housley Communications. The gift will pay for construction of the tower, as well as the creation of an endowment that will fund future maintenance and upkeep. Bob had a vision of putting a bell tower on the ASU campus for a long time, Mona Housley said. I wish he were here to finally see it happen, but I'm also happy to be able to fulfill his dream. He also gave so much to the San Angelo community during his life, and the Housley Tower will be both a permanent reminder of his kindness and leadership, as well as a fitting tribute to his generosity and spirit. The twin high-rise resident halls once dominated the San Angelo skyline during my time as a student at Angelo State, said ASU President Ronnie Hawkins, Jr. But the Housley Tower will soon become the new iconic structure of the campus and the city. Bob Housley believed in the same principles and values that we strive to uphold at Angelo State, and the tower that bears his name will stand as a lasting symbol of that commitment to excellence and the community. We cannot thank Mona Housley enough for her generosity and are honored she chose Angelo State to be a steward of her husband's legacy. A native of Carlisle, Arkansas, Bob Housley earned his pilot's license at the age of 17 and then served in the National Guard, including during the 1957 integration crisis at Central High School in Little Rock, where he aided in the protection of the first integrated students in the U.S. He married the former Mona Saunders in 1958 and later took a job with Texas International Aviation that eventually led to his family moving to San Angelo in 1976. On October 1st, 1980, Housley launched Housley Communications, based on the principles of honesty, integrity, quality, and professionalism. His innovative nature, passion for customer satisfaction, and personal relationships with his employees were instrumental in establishing Housley Communications as an industry leader in providing construction and technical services to many of the major telecommunications companies in the U.S. and beyond, including Mexico and Africa. In addition to his business success, Housley cared deeply for the community. He was an active supporter of various organizations, including the Lighthouse for the Blind and West Texas Rehabilitation Center, and he served on the Board of Trustees for the ASU Foundation and First Financial Bank for many years. Housley's son, Kevin, who worked alongside his father as Executive Vice President of Housley Communications, developed the Housley Principled Leadership Program that has been adapted into the management curriculum in ASU's Norris Vincent College of Business. The Housley Tower project is currently in the planning and design phase, with construction scheduled to begin later this year. Tom Neary Jr. is a news and information specialist in the ASU Office of Communications and Marketing. Former San Angelo teacher sentenced to probation for improper relationship with student, by Rosanna Frere, published March 10th. A former San Angelo ISD teacher has been sentenced to probation after an improper relationship with a student was revealed. In November 2020, SAISD officials contacted police about the possible relationship between the teacher and a 14-year-old student at Central High School's Oaks campus. Police interviewed the student, who told investigators they added the teacher on Instagram at the beginning of the 2020-21 school year, records state. They began to exchange sexually explicit messages through the app. At one point in the messages, the conversation suggested the teacher had touched the student inappropriately, according to an arrest affidavit. Cole Alexander Larson, 24, was arrested in Midland in January 2021 on suspicion of indecency with a child by contact and improper relationship between educator and student. On Thursday, March 10th, Larson appeared in the 51st District Court via Zoom with Judge Tommy LaFon, Magistrate Judge. State prosecutors and Larson agreed on a deferred adjudication plea deal in which Larson will be placed on 6 years of community supervision probation with no contact with children under the age of 18. Improper relationship between educator and student is a second-degree felony punishable by up to 20 years in prison and a fine of up to $10,000. Deferred adjudication is a type of probation that allows the defendant the opportunity to keep a conviction off their criminal record if they follow the rules of the agreement with the court. Deferred adjudication is typically a better deal than regular community supervision because if a person finishes the term successfully, the person does not have a conviction, according to TexasDefenseLaw.com. If Larson does not comply with the conditions of his community supervision, the district attorney may ask the judge to find Larson guilty and put him in jail or prison. Larson's attorney asked if some family members could be exempt from the no-contact rule. It was ruled that the matter would be revisited after Larson completes probation. Larson lives in Midland, and his probation will be transferred to Midland County. Erie County boys fall to defending state champ Texline in 1A state semifinals, by Charles Bryce, published March 10th. Stratton Potter isn't known as one of Texline's bigger offensive threats, but he certainly hadn't been through the first five rounds of the playoffs. But when the Tornadoes needed someone to knock down shots, it was Potter that came through. Spearheading Texline's pressured defense in the first half, Potter's offense caught up to his defensive effort in the second, and with Potter scoring came the rest of the Tornadoes. After going without a single made three-pointer in the first five rounds of the playoffs, Potter sank four to help Texline knock off Erie County 58-42 in the semifinals of the UIL State Boys Basketball Tournament on Friday morning in the Alamo Dome. Texline will go for its second consecutive state championship on Saturday morning when it takes on Grayford in the title game at 8:30 a.m. If it wasn't for Potter, the Tornadoes may have been the ones going home. Potter had been struggling, and I knew when he hit that first three, he was going to relax and hit four threes, Texline head coach Kobe Beckner said. As expected, much of Erie County's defense attention was focused on standout seniors Will Luther and Noel Lozano. Foul trouble, though, kept both players on the bench for a good portion of the first half. Offense was hard to come by, but the Texline defense made sure the absence of their two leaders wouldn't spell the end of their season. Our defense helps create our own offense, and we really thrive off of our defense. So playing good defense, getting good stops, really helps us have momentum on the defensive end for sure, Potter said. The Hornets had 13 turnovers in the first half, but only trailed by six, 26-20. Marion County head coach John Morrow felt his team was in the perfect spot to begin the third quarter. "I told the kids at halftime we were right where we need to be, and then text line came out and hit some big shots," Morrow said. "We didn't rotate on defense. They got some open looks, knocked them down, and that's what a defending state champion does." With Luther and Lozano back on the floor, it gave Potter and Elias Espino 16 points for three-pointers, open looks on the perimeter. Potter sank three threes in the first 4 minutes of the third quarter. He finished with a game-high 20 points to go with five rebounds and four steals. "I was on the bench at one point, and Stratton hits two back-to-back threes, and I was going crazy for him because we're not used to him hitting that many. But he hit them tonight and came through in the clutch," Luther said. Toward the end of the game, the Tornadoes' lead had ballooned to 20 points. Tech's line's experience in the Alamo Dome had paid off. "We came to shoot around yesterday, and even today we were asking questions. Where's this? Where's that?" Morrow said. "Tech's line pretty much knows where everything's at. That definitely helped them." Though Luther, 9 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals, was back on the floor in the second half, he continued to defer to his teammates. "Really, we always expect me and Noel to get collapsed on all the time and get double-teamed," Luther said. "We've just been telling Potter and Espino that if the ball comes to you, you shoot it. These guys shot the ball really well today." Fighting back tears throughout the press conference, Morrow credited his players' fight even in the bleakest of circumstances, working to stay in the fight as long as possible. "Our kids never quit," Morrow said. "It's one thing about these kids is they're fighters." Erie County, which was making its second state tourney appearance and first since 1961, finished 33-4. The Hornets' top scorers were Bob Morrow, 13, Trevin Coffle, 12, and Dren Quirney, 10. Erie County will lose three players to graduation this spring: Eli Davis, Parker Connor, and Quirney. And in a related story, Erie County's Trevin Coffle named MVP of 11-1A boys basketball team by Amy McDaniel, published March 11th. Erie County's high school's Trevin Coffle was named most valuable player on the all-district 11-1A boys basketball team. The junior helped the district champion Hornets extend their district game winning streak to 42 games. Erie County junior Jordan Harrison was the offensive MVP, while Hornet junior Bob Morrow was the defensive MVP. Sterling City sophomore Jonathan Monreal was the newcomer of the year. Because the San Angelo newspaper hasn't published enough local articles in the last few weeks to make up an hour-long broadcast, we're going to include a few locally written news stories and feature items in this hour. From the sports section, Lakeview's Wagner and Williams named to 3-4A girls basketball team by Charles Bryce, published March 17th. Lakeview High School's Michaela Wagner earned first-team honors, and fellow senior Alexis Williams was named to the second team on the girls' District 3-4A girls basketball team. The Maidens finished 5-19 overall and 1-9 in district in Stephen Pinchback's first season as head coach. District champion Leveland received 3 of the 4 superlative awards. Senior Emma Kent was selected as the MVP. Junior Lacey White was named offensive MVP, and senior Micah Graff earned defensive MVP honors. Rounding out the superlatives, Sweetwater sophomore Honeste Griffin was named newcomer of the year. San Angelo Central girls soccer team clinches District 2-6A title at home by Charles Bryce, published March 15th. The San Angelo Central High School girls soccer team rallied to beat Abilene High 3-2 and clinch the outright District 2-6A championship Tuesday afternoon at Old Bobcat Stadium. Central finished the regular season at 15-3-2 overall and 10-0-2 in district. Abilene finished the season at 3-9-5 and 3-5-4. The Lady Cats playoff pairing will be confirmed later this week, but it looks like Central will face El Paso Eastlake next week at Midland's Grande Communications Stadium. Lady Cats head coach Ben Henry talked about what this district title means to his players and the program. "You know, it's crazy because you don't know how many of these you're going to get as a coach," Henry said, while trying to fight back tears of joy. "Each one is very special. I've got 14 seniors, and it's great to get a championship, but it's really all about memories with these groups. And now they can't get anything taken away from them. They've got a championship, and it's theirs forever. 14 seniors took care of business. I just couldn't be happier for them at this point because this is going to be a great memory for them." The Lady Cats took a 1-0 lead in the first half on a goal by Ava Ibarra. Abilene answered with back-to-back goals by Zoe Castro and Layla Brown off assist by Amaris Amaya and Simone Cano to take a 2-1 first half lead. Emily Sikora pulled Central even at 2-2 heading into halftime, and Alyssa Villarreal scored the game-winning goal in the second half. Ellie Barker, Sophia Metters-Safant, and A.B. Kalbach each had an assist for Central. Addie Hockerode was in goal for the Lady Cats. The Lady Cats and the Lady Eagles tied 1-1 in the first pairing in Abilene, and Central knew Abilene would put up a fight again. "Coach Brent Camp, he's a good bud of mine, and he always has his teams ready to go, too, and they're a talented group," Henry said. "He's 1 or 2 goals away from being in the playoffs at this point. It's a shame that he can't get in as well. We knew it was coming in that they were going to throw down. They always do." The girls stayed tough and managed to fight back. With so many seniors on the team, the Lady Cats have had great leadership throughout the regular season. "I would say the best thing we have is our teamwork, obviously, since there's a lot of us," said Kyle Back, one of the 14 seniors. "We have a lot of chemistry, so we just work together really well." The Lady Cats' senior class includes Caitlin Freeman, Kenzie Griffith, Jasmine Gonzalez, Jules Meza, Claudia Mayers, Camille Hull, Ellie Barker, Bree Garcia, Ivana Berharis, Riley Herbert, Clarissa Rueda, Kaldbach, Metters-Savant, and Harkelrode. It's been a magical ride for the most part for the Lady Cats in 2022. We had a couple blurps on the defensive side, but today, collectively as a team, we kind of got our shape back, and that's really what we're working on going into the playoffs and the pressure side of things, because everything increases in the playoffs, Henry said. "But overall, I'm pretty pleased with everybody on this side and everybody at every position as well, too." Looking ahead to the postseason, Henry says, "I think we've got a good run in us, but we'll take it game by game and try to take care of business each time." Central lost a 2-1 heartbreaker against Keller High in the area round of the playoffs last season. The Lady Cats were the district runners-up behind Odessa Permian in 2021. The Lady Cats are feeling more confident this time around. "We've struggled some games, but we've always managed to pull through and keep pushing forward," the Lady Cats' senior goalkeeper, Harkelrode, said. Despite ending the season with a loss and officially getting eliminated from the playoffs, the Lady Eagles coach thought his players fought hard. "I feel like it was a great match on both sides," Camp said. "Coach Henry always has his young ladies well prepared for every game that they play, and they had a good plan, and ultimately, they were able to find the net one more time than we did." Angelo State men's basketball eliminated by Buffs in South Central regional matchup by Charles Bryce, published March 12th. The number 7-seeded Angelo State University men's basketball team saw its season come to an end in an 84-76 loss against number 2 West Texas A&M in an NCAA Division II South Central regional quarterfinal matchup Saturday at the Rip Griffin Center in Lubbock. After trailing 40-24 at the half, the Rams had a furious comeback attempt late in the second half. ASU cut the deficit to 78-73 with 48 seconds left on a three-pointer by Devon Thomas, but that was as close as it got down the stretch. WT, 29-6, will take on third-seeded Black Hills State in the semifinals on Sunday. ASU finished 20-10. Julius Brown scored a game-high 30 points on 10 of 22 shooting for the Buffs. Hayden Blankley, 17, Larry Wise, 12, and Zach Toussaint, 10, also scored in double digits for WT. In his final game as a Ram, Paul Williams tied Thomas with a team-high 18 points. Lathaniel Bastian, 16, Dante Moses, 14, and Tyrell Carroll, 10, also scored in double digits. ASU had a better shooting performance than WT, as the Rams connected on 50% of their shots, and the Buffs were good on 39%. The Rams finished with 36 points in the paint, compared to 24 for the Buffs, who never trailed. ASU and WT split the first two meetings. The Rams upset the Buffs in Canyon in the first showdown, and WT bounced back with a win in the Lone Star Conference Tournament quarterfinals last week. Track. San Angelo Central races to West Texas Relays titles by Standard Time staff, published March 12th. San Angelo Central won both the boys and girls championships Thursday at the West Texas Relays in Odessa. The Bobcats scored 177 to best Odessa Permian, 152, for the boys' trophy. The Lady Cats, 109.33, nipped Midland High by a third of a point. Central competes next at the Angelo State Spring Break Relays on Thursday before the San Angelo Relays, which is set for March 25th and 26th. Central High brought home 8 individual or relay titles. The Central boys won all 3 relays and picked up individual titles from Raven Ortiz, Jacob English, and Cole McWilliams. The Central girls got an individual title from McKenna McMillan. She won the pole vault with a mark of 10 feet. The Bobcats won the 4x100 relay. Jordan Weatherspoon, McWilliams, Andre Diaz, and Colton Gossett teamed to run a time of 42.20 seconds. The team of Darius Harvatin, Weatherspoon, McWilliams, and Tyler Hill were first in the 4x200 relay with a time of 1:27.40. Weatherspoon, Kente Nichols, Austin Johnson, and Hill teamed to run 3:28.90 for the 4x400 relay gold. Raven Ortiz was a double gold medal winner in the field events for Central. He won the long jump 22-4 3/4 and the triple jump 44-3 1/4. McWilliams won the 200 meters in a time of 22, while Jacob English won the high jump 6-4. The Bobcats had 5 second-place finishes. Layden Eubanks was second in the 100, 11.02. English was second in the 400, 51.8, while Andre Sanchez was second in the shot put, 43-6. Hill finished second behind McWilliams in the 200, 22.1. Nichols was second behind Ortiz in the long jump, 29.5. The Central boys got 3 third-place finishes. Johnson, 110 hurdles, 15.77. Sanchez, discus, 138.3. And Brandon Smith, shot put, 42.5. The Central girls had second place finishes by Hannah Zweibel, 800 meters, 2:26.20. Kinsley Baker, 100 hurdles, 16.50. Schwan Teal Watson, pole vault, 9. And by the team of Tylee Self, Neva Hearn, Kamarla Bowen, and Caroline Steele, 4x200 relay, 1:48. The Lady Cats got third place finishes by Michaela Salazar, 300 hurdles, 50.4. Peyton Mayberry, long jump, 17.1. And Layla Young, shot put, 36.9.5. Softball. San Angelo Central off to 0-2 start in district by Charles Bryce, published March 12th. San Angelo Central High School dropped the 16-6 six-inning decision against Odessa High in a District 2-6A contest Saturday at the Ratliff Softball Complex in Odessa. Nevia Sanchez did the bulk of the damage against the Lady Cats with 3 home runs and 7 RBIs. 2 of her 3 dingers were 3-run blasts. The Lady Cats rallied with 4 runs in the top of the 5th inning, including RBI singles by Taylor Martin, Kylie Banda, and Alyssa Rodriguez, who also had an RBI single in the 2nd. Odessa improved to 6-5-1 overall and 1-1 in district. Central, coming off an 8-2 loss at home against Friendship in the district opener on Tuesday, dropped to 10-6-1 and 0-2 in district. The Lady Cats will shoot for their first district win when they host Midland High at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 15th at the Central Complex. Cahoma 9, Colorado City 1. The Bulldoggettes rolled past the Lady Wolves at the Cahoma Round Robin Tournament on Saturday. The Bulldoggettes were leading Colorado City 4-1 after 3 innings before erupting with 5 runs in the 4th. Colorado City scored its only run in 3rd. Cahoma finished with 5 hits and held the Lady Wolves to 1. Bulldoggettes pitcher Michaela Calvillo struck out 7 and walked 4 to get the win. Casey Rivera was charged with the loss for Colorado City after giving up 5 hits and 8 earned runs. She struck out 4 and walked 4. Hannah Wells had a home run and 3 RBIs. Christian Everett drove in 2 runs, as Carly Burt and Calvillo had 1 RBI apiece. Cahoma, 10-4-1, tied La Mesa in 1-1 in the nightcap. Soccer. Lakeview girls win outright 3-4A title. Chiefs earn a share. By Charles Bryce, published March 11th. Frigid temperatures couldn't stop the Maidens from being red hot. The Lakeview High School girls soccer team captured an outright District 3-4A championship with a 3-0 shutout against Lubbock Estacado Friday night at San Angelo Stadium. Lakeview finished the regular season at 10-5-2 overall and 6-1-1 in district. 2 weeks ago, after a loss to Snyder, the Maidens were looking like they would be the number 2 seed, but Greenwood knocked off Snyder and opened the door for Lakeview to move up. "And that's what we did," Lakeview head coach Henry Gonzalez said. "We knew this game was our opportunity to overcome our obstacles and reach our goal." Lakeview will face Mineral Wells in a bi-district game at Abilene's Shotwell Stadium on March 24th. The Maidens got things going in the first half when Jasmine Flores was dropped by the defense and Allie Flores connected on a penalty kick to make it 1-0. Victoria Enriquez followed with a spectacular 30-yard free kick that pushed the Maidens' advantage to 2-0. Jasmine Flores gave Lakeview some extra breathing room with a goal set up by an assist by Faith Miller. Jennifer Mata and Alicia Sanchez split time in goal for the shutout. Lakeview Boys 5, Lubbock Estacado 0. Ricky Ramirez had a hat trick and JV Antu had 2 goals as the Lakeview Chiefs earned a share of the District 3-4A title with Snyder after winning the regular season finale on the road against Estacado. Lakeview improved to 12-5-1 overall and 7-1 in district. Lakeview and Snyder will flip a coin to determine who will be the number 1 and number 2 seeds. The Chiefs will face either Graham or Mineral Wells in a bi-district playoff on March 24th or March 25th. Details will be confirmed later. "I just want to thank my Savior, Jesus Christ, for this championship," Lakeview head coach Kyle Jones said. "Without him, nothing is possible. I am very excited and proud for these boys. They won 2 big games on the road to earn this, and no one can take this away from them. We had a game plan for Estacado. The boys performed as well as they could with 29-degree weather and a 15-mile-per-hour wind. They have earned everything and deserve this. Ace Perez, Christian Gatlin, Alexis Ledesma, and Tyler Dunn each had an assist. Goalkeeper Joshua Torres was credited with his fifth shutout in district play. He got a strong defensive support from Christian Gatlin, Sterling Gray, Alexis Ledesma, and Hagen Gossett, as well as Dunn. And now here's a feature column. Here are some tips for cooking with wine by Gus Clemens, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published March 15th. Wines pair with meals. Wines also pair with cooking meals. Foundational understanding. Bad wine is not good cooking wine. If you do not like the wine, why mess up a meal with the same bad wine? Sure, avoid using high-quality wine in cooking, but that leaves an ocean of very drinkable, affordable, widely available wine to abet your gastronomic adventures. For braises, stews, long-simmering sauces, add wine early in the simmer stage after you brown the meat and vegetables. There is an abundance of flavors in the juices in the pan. Add wine, garlic, and shallots. Let it simmer, reduce, to create great sauces. Wine also is a marvelous marinade to tenderize and enhance flavors. Here are common wines and ideas for cooking pairing. Cabernet Sauvignon as a marinade softens the meat and adds flavor at the same time. It is ideal for braising meats. When the braising is done, use the liquid left behind to make a glaze. Cab also works if you want to deglaze a pan. With its low sugar content, you will not have an issue with cab caramelizing in the pan. Merlot is ideal for pan sauces and reductions. Combine Merlot with other ingredients like broth or spices, then simmer. When reduced, you will have a versatile thick sauce for your meat dish. Pinot Noir, with its lightness, goes best with lighter dishes, including chicken. Because of its lightness, Pinot does well with dishes that ask for a lot of wine. It will tenderize the meat while not adding excess flavor. It also can be added to a hearty beef stew to generate elegance that flirts with decadence. Zinfandel, not white Zinfandel, we're talking about big, fruity, sometimes jammy, often high alcohol Zin. That Zin easily will overpower lighter dishes, but it will work well with steaks such as ribeye, curries, burgers, and other full-flavored meats. Boxed wine. We are not talking about the Loche Planck of your college days. Today, there are many respectable bag-in-a-box wines. They are more than quaffable and reasonably priced, which makes them ideal candidates for cooking wines. Tap into that resource. Tasting notes. Baron Felipe de Rothschild, Escudo Rojo Reserva Cabernet Sauvignon, Chile, 2018. Polished, easily approachable, $15 to $18. Ritual Pinot Noir, Casablanca Valley, Chile, 2017. Wonderful Pinot Noir value. Good fruit, excellent acidity. $17 to $21. Last round. Why should you never use beef stew as a password? Because it is not stroganoff. Wine time. Email wine@cwadv.com. Newsletter, gusclemens.substack.com. Website, gusclemenswine.com. Facebook, Gus Clemens on Wine. Twitter, @GusClemens. Now here's the column from Allison Watkins. Tips for planting vegetables in your garden this spring. published March 11th. It's been very dry, and we are still experiencing cold snaps, so it's not time to plant warm season vegetables yet, at least not without a solid plan for cold protection. Spring will be here soon, however, and now is a good time to plan and prepare to grow some food in the yard. Whether planting a few vegetables in flower beds, growing in containers, or creating a large garden plot, any effort to grow vegetables is a worthy goal. Here are some tips to have a productive crop. First, choose a location with plenty of sun. Vegetable plants need at least 6 to 7 hours of direct sun per day to produce a good crop. Also, consider the soil. If planting in containers, don't use real soil. Potting mix provides better structure for plant roots in pots. If planting in the ground, incorporate some high-quality compost before planting to improve soil structure, provide nutrients, and help plants grow more vigorously. After preparing the soil, install drip irrigation. Drip irrigation is a great option for watering vegetables since it applies the water to the soil where it's needed and doesn't stress plants by spraying on the leaves. After planting the vegetables, apply a 3 to 4 inch layer of wood mulch. Mulch will greatly reduce the most common frustration of vegetable gardening, weeds, but it needs to be deep enough to have an impact on weed populations. If starting vegetables from seed, wait until after the seeds emerge to apply mulch. If you're just starting out and want to have the best chance for success, try some of the easier to grow vegetables like asparagus, melons, squash, okra, and peppers. Tomatoes are the most popular home vegetable crop, and they can grow very successfully in the Concho Valley, but require some special attention to get the best production. Choose heat-tolerant and disease-resistant varieties, and keep an eye out for pests like spider mites and tomato hornworms. Join us Wednesday, March 23rd for a home landscaping seminar focusing on lawn care, tree and shrub planting and care, and landscape plant selection. Visit https://tomgreen.agrilife.org for details and how to sign up. Also, don't miss the annual Concho Valley Gardeners Plant Sale Saturday, April 2nd at 8 a.m. Keep an eye on https://txmg.org/Concho Valley for updates and announcements. They will have plenty of tomato transplants along with squash, peppers, herbs, and lots of ornamentals that thrive in the Concho Valley. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.